This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. South Korean troops are on high alert today after the death of North Korean leader Kim Jong-il. Kim's chosen successor and third son, Kim Jong-un, now becomes the figurehead of an exalted dynasty that is revered by its citizens. Such abject devotion is puzzling to us and to baffled foreign policy experts who tried to make sense of the isolated country that glorifies its leader as our great mother. Over the next few days, we'll likely be hearing about a nation in deep mourning, about the transfer of power, and maybe some saber-rattling, and again wonder how Kim managed to inspire and oppress at the same time. We spoke to North Korea analyst B.R. Myers last year about his book, The Cleanest Race. He sifted through decades of propaganda to better understand the paranoia, nationalism, and racism fueling the DPNK's brazen behavior on the world stage. B.R. talked to us about some of the misconceptions we have about the DPNK.
I suppose the most common one is the misperception that North Korea is a hardline communist state, which it really isn't. When you start to dig a little bit deeper and read what the North Korean government says to its own people, it's a race-based nationalism that is actually incompatible with communism. It's much closer to, say, the fascism that we dealt with during the Pacific War.
Well, we'll dig into that in just a minute, but let's talk a little bit first about how they view us. Describe some of the posters that you saw in city centers that show North Korea decimating the United States.
Yeah, these are posters which show North Korean missiles or North Korean fighter planes blowing the U.S. Capitol to pieces. Usually the slogan on the poster is something along the lines of 10,000 times revenge or destroy the evil of the Yankee jackals.
And I noticed that the Yankee jackals often have severely exaggerated hooked noses.
Right. According to the North Korean worldview, the evil of the Yankee race can be read, so to speak, in our facial characteristics and our racial characteristics.
Do the citizens of North Korea have any idea what really goes on in the United States?
I would say that educated citizens in Pyongyang have quite a high awareness of what goes on in America. For example, I've read propaganda novels which talk about how politics works in Washington between the Democrats and the Republicans. But the average North Korean really just gets a very caricatured black and white kind of view of the Americans as an inherently degenerate race, an inherently vicious race that just wants North Korea's downfall.
Well, this is definitely a military-first state reflected in those posters. Here's a clip from a North Korea propaganda film captured in the documentary The Vice Guide to North Korea.
If the enemy dares to invade the land of Korea even an inch, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Korea, where the whole country has been turned into an impregnable fortress and the whole people have been equipped with arms, will smite aggressors mercilessly.
So, Brian, these massive, carefully orchestrated military parades and this slavish cult-like devotion to the dear leader sounds like Stalinist Russia. Why do you say that it isn't?
Superficially, it might look like Stalin Soviet Union, but it's just as similar, say, to Nazi Germany under the Third Reich. It's strange that we have this so-called Godwin's Law in place in academia, which means that you cannot compare any country to the Third Reich without being considered unserious. So when we see phenomena which were just as common in fascism as they were in communism, we tend to think only of communism, and I think that's wrong. They look at history as something that was determined by race, and right there, you're completely incompatible with Marx.
Now, the title of your book is The Cleanest Race, and that suggests that the source of the hatred is largely racial, which you trace back to having roots in the Japanese occupation. How did it become what it is today?
Yeah, well, many people, I think, mistakenly think that this race-based nationalism is thousands of years old. The South Korean people also seem to think that. In fact, as you just said, it derives from the Japanese propaganda that was spread on the peninsula in the 1930s and 1940s, back when Korea was a Japanese colony. And according to that propaganda, the Japanese and the Koreans were all part of one uniquely pure race. And after liberation in 1945, the North Koreans essentially took that Japanese propaganda and Koreanized it.
North Korea, in fact, has gone to great lengths to resist a multi-ethnic, multiracial society. Describe to us some of the things that you saw and heard that demonstrate this.
Well, it doesn't have to go very far to resist a multiracial society because nobody from another country actually wants to live there. But foreign businessmen and foreign diplomats are isolated from the general population. And that also goes for friendly diplomats, like, say, Cuban diplomats. And abortions are forced onto pregnant North Korean women who return from China because the authorities are afraid that they might be mixed blood or half Chinese children in those wombs. So they take racial purity very seriously and are, of course, horrified by what they see as the dilution of the Korean bloodline in South Korea, which is, of course, slowly moving towards becoming a multiracial society.
It is shocking to consider how diametrically opposed that is to at least the American official embrace of tolerance and multiculturalism. Striking how something so politically incorrect here can be national policy there.
Yes, and I think this is one reason why Americans have such a hard time grasping North Korea. It's just so different from the United States. And I think we tend always to downplay the importance of ideology in international conflict. We do this with Islamism, for example, which we always tend to attribute to economic causes, to deprivation and so on. And we especially underestimate the role of nationalism in other countries, especially in countries that are anti-American. Both in Vietnam and in Iraq, we underestimated the importance of nationalism with disastrous results. And I'm afraid that we might be doing it again with North Korea by underestimating the role of nationalism there.
North Korea analyst B.R. Myers. He's an editor for The Atlantic, a professor at Dongseo University in South Korea, and an expert in the propaganda and ideology of North Korea. North Korea is an almost hermetically closed-off society, hostile to journalists. Now, how did you find all this material?
Well, this kind of material, what I specialize in really is North Korean propaganda, North Korean ideology, and that's the one part of North Korea that's very easy to study and to research because the North Koreans never stop talking about themselves, and they send these materials to China or to South Korea, not least to make money from it. So what I do as a researcher is I go to the North Korea Resource Center in Seoul, where I can find newspapers and magazines and even listen to the latest TV news or watch North Korean movies with headphones. So it's really very easy to access this information, which makes it all the more baffling to me why nobody in the West seems to think of it as a subject of research.
Brian, I've been in communist countries dominated by strong leaders. And in Cuba, for example, I got the sense that if Castro died, the people wouldn't line up to defend the nation. They'd actually welcome Western intervention. And there are a number of Western diplomats who have that view of the North Korean people. You warn against Westerners thinking that the party ideology doesn't permeate so deeply and isn't that strong outside of the government. Why do you think that it is?
Well, we need, first of all, I think, to distinguish between communism and what the North Koreans believe, which is this, as I said, this race-based nationalism. Communism pretty much failed quite early on in the game, and even the regimes which were paying lip service to communism realized that it wasn't really working. Whereas nationalism is just as well suited to bad times as to good times, and it doesn't actually discredit itself in the same way that Marxism-Leninism did. And there's very little disconnect, I think, between North Korea's propaganda and its policymaking, because the propaganda says that North Korea can and must play by its own rules, and that attitude is indeed reflected in the country's policymaking, in its pursuit of a nuclear weapon, in the face of world opposition, in its drug smuggling activities, its counterfeiting of American currency, and so on. I think diplomats are naturally inclined to want to play up the importance of what they hear behind closed doors, what they hear at banquets and so on. But those North Korean officials have every reason to want to tell foreign diplomats what they want to hear. So I really do believe that the propaganda, the ideology, is a much more reliable guide to Pyongyang's behavior than whatever small talk is dished out to visiting foreigners.
What chance do China and the West have of convincing North Korea to give up its nuclear program?
I think North Korea can never be induced to give up its nuclear program, no matter how much aid is offered North Korea in return, because that nuclear program is really the only thing left that the regime and its subjects can be proud of. It really is the only reason for North Korea to exist as a separate state. And you can neither bribe a regime nor bully a regime into committing political suicide. The point that I want to make in the book is that this is the first far-right, the first race-based nationalist state, perhaps the first quasi-fascist state in history, to possess nuclear weapons. And we cannot simply assume that this regime is going to collapse without making use of them. The regime tends to celebrate rash and instinctive behavior in its propaganda, and it constantly makes fun of the Soviet Union for collapsing without firing a shot. And these are things that make me worried that if North Korea feels that it has no alternative, it might very well make use of those nuclear weapons.
That was my earlier conversation with B.R. Myers, a professor at Dongseo University in South Korea. His beautifully illustrated book is called The Cleanest Race, How North Koreans See Themselves and Why It Matters. Coming up, 2011, a year of big ideas and of awesome. We'll wrap it up with Brady Carlson when word of mouth continues. This is NHPR.